is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Continuing with Bob Zimmerman, author of Genesis, the story of Apollo 8, the first manned flight to another world at Christmas time. The Saturn V with Apollo 8 atop it launches on December 21st. It is now Christmas Eve, December 24th. They are approaching the moon. They've been inside the moon's gravity for some time now. Frank Borman, Jim Lovell, and Bill Anders. Bob, thank you for continuing this exciting story, even though I know it's going to come out all right. This is a moment where everybody worried on Earth paying attention. Two acronyms that NASA used again and again. Loss of LOI, Lunar Orbital Injection, and then loss of signal, LOS. Let's deal with both of them because these are dramatic moments. They're going very fast. They're in the moon's gravity pull. The moon is pulling them towards it. They're outside of the Earth's gravity. However, they've got to, in some way, put themselves into lunar orbit. How do they do that, Bob?
It's interesting. On the entire three-day journey to the moon, the way the capsule was oriented, they never saw the moon. They actually were pointing back to the Earth with the engine behind them, pointing at the moon. So their windows always showed the Earth. It wasn't until just before landing, just before reaching the moon, that they finally turned the capsule around. But they did first, they had to fire the SPS engine. Now, the SPS engine was on the service module of the Luna capsule, and it was the only engine they had that could get them into lunar orbit and get them out of lunar orbit. It was the reason Susan Borman thought Frank Borman would die in lunar orbit, because there was no redundancy with that engine. If it didn't work, they were stuck. And so lunar orbit injection is firing the SPS engine to put them in orbit. But the way the orbital mechanics worked, they fired that engine from behind, while they were behind the moon, where no communications with Earth could occur. And so here they are approaching the moon, and just before they go and lose contact, it's the first time they can see the lunar surface. And Bill Anders says, "Hey, I got the moon." This is the first time he actually noticed it. Could see it. And then they went behind the moon and we lost signal. And everybody on Earth had no idea if that SPS engine fired, if it fired correctly, if it fired for the right amount of time. It has to fire for the right amount of time, because if it's too short or too long, they'll be in the wrong orbit. One orbit could send them off out into space, and the other orbit could send them crashing onto the lunar surface. They had to be right. So here we are, we're sitting, and you have to wait. The lunar orbit was 2 hours long, and so you had to wait for about an hour before they came out from behind the moon to announce, yes, they're in lunar orbit. They're successfully there now.
And in lunar orbit now, they're going to change the distance to the moon. They're going to lower their orbit eventually using that SPS. I want to talk about the SPS engine, Bob. It's very powerful. And I think you write that it's powerful enough to take them to another planet if it wants to.
Once you get into, with the Saturn V rocket, a rocket that powerful, similar to, this, by the way, Starship Super Heavy in power, once you get into Earth orbit, the difference in energy needed to go from the moon or to go to another planet is minimal. So if you were in Earth orbit and wanted to use this to go the upper stage of the Saturn V, not the SPS engine, the upper stage of the Saturn V could take you almost anywhere in the solar system. Once you're there, you don't have the upper stage anymore, but you can use the SPS engine to put yourself into orbit around Mars, around the moon, around anywhere. Now, of course, you've got to get back, and this gets more complicated because you don't have the same kind of power that you would if you were at Mars versus the moon. But nonetheless, yes, you can pretty much go anywhere. Saturn V was designed to allow us to settle the solar system, and that's why Elon Musk is building a rocket comparable to it for the same purpose.
A detail about the SPS, and I'm not sure how to say this. There were bubbles in the fuel tank, in the fuel lines. What did that mean, Bob? They concerned themselves with it.
Well, a bubble in a fuel line could prevent fuel from reaching its reaching the ignition point, and therefore you wouldn't have a rocket would work.
And they were worried about SPS. They were not sure that it had enough power. It had not been performing up to power limits, I think, and so this burn was. The opinion was, well, we'll fire it up and that'll clear the line. Do I remember that correctly?
That's correct. That's exactly correct. And that's exactly what happened, and it functioned exactly as it was supposed to.
I flashed that point, Bob, because I wrote it down again risk-taking. That's how...
Yes. Remember, they thought the odds were good, that this was a 50-50 chance they'd come home. Talk about willing to take risks. And they were, once again, the reason they were willing to take risks is because they wanted to demonstrate that a free people could do it better, to quote John Kennedy. Not that a Soviet-style, top-down government-run system where the government controls everything can't do it as well as a free people. And the way NASA functioned in the 60s was basically like it's functioning today. NASA didn't build very much. It hired private companies to build things for it. The Apollo capsule, the lunar capsule, the lunar module was built by private companies. The only parts of Saturn V were built by private companies, though the whole thing was managed by the Huntsville team under Wernher von Braun. That was the reason they were doing this. They had this in mind.
They're in lunar orbit. They look out the windows down towards the moon, and they're going to change their orbit from 69 to 194 to 69 or something. They're going to use the SPS to get lower. My sense, Bob, and you had the transcript you quote from throughout the book, they were disappointed with the surface of the moon. Is that a good memory?
It's partly true. There's truth to it. There's a great deal of truth to that. It's always more complicated. But, Lovell is the best example. He was the explorer guy. He wanted to go explore the worlds. And all three of them looked at the lunar surface, and as Borman said to me, it looked like a skull. No color, no life. They had two telecasts. The first telecast, they described the lunar surface to everyone. And what Anders says, it looks like a sand box that my kids have been playing in, all holes and footprint, craters. And as Borman said, this does not look like a hospitable place to work or live. And in many ways, their words, I think, pricked the balloon of the American ideal of exploring and settling the worlds. It's an unfortunate consequence of the mission. They did not intend to do that, but that's partly what they ended up doing, because the moon no longer looked like a place to go to settle and to live on. And so there's some truth to that, John.
I like Anders. He had time enough waiting to get a mission all the time. This Anders just kept coming. He would apply to anything. I can see him applying to a better spot in heaven. He keeps applying. But at one point, he took time to go on to learn geology and to go into the field in geology. And he makes a remark that you quote in the book, or you paraphrase in the book, that the moon looks like it's made up of the same stuff as the Earth. He had it right, Bob. This is before the theory of Theia colliding with the Earth to spin off the detritus that turns into our moon. He had an intuition about it being that close. And I want to emphasize, as Bob does throughout the book, this is the first time human beings have been here. They don't have easy metaphors. Nobody's had to describe the moon before. So I use the word disappointment, but at the same time, they wanted to know whether the moon was a product of volcanic activity or impact activity. Did they decide, Bob?
Before this mission, there had been an ongoing debate by scientists for decades on whether the craters on the moon were volcanic calderas or they were impacts. And it was not a very, among scientists, it wasn't a big debate, but it was still an unheard question. And after Apollo 8, that debate ended, because the astronauts made it pretty clear that looking up close with human eyes, these were impacts, impacts upon impacts upon impacts. That had been, the scientific community had been moving to that consensus with the unmanned missions that had looked at the moon, but the words of the Apollo 8 astronauts ended the debate for all time. There might be volcanic activity on the moon, we might have some craters that are calderas, but basically it is impact. They settled that debate.
The book is Genesis, the story of Apollo 8, the first manned flight to another world. When we come back, the Cold War. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.